voter turnout was very disappointing in this primary. I think it would happen for a couple of reasons. One being that this is the first time that the citywide primary has been in June.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, my conversation with two mayors, one of a small village in New York and one of New York's capital city. We begin with my interview with Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan. On Tuesday, June 22nd, she took a big step forward in her bid for a third four-year term by winning the Democratic primary. Later in the episode, I'll speak with Ellen Tillipa, the mayor of the village of Cooperstown, New York, which is gearing up for what it hopes will be a more typical summer tourism season. First, my interview with Mayor Kathy Sheehan of Albany. Why do you think you won the primary?
Well, look, I think that notwithstanding the challenging year that we've had, we are on a great trajectory. We were in good shape before the pandemic hit after having to go through a number of years where, you know, we had the most fiscally stressed city in the state, according to the state comptroller's office. And we were able to manage through that. We've been able to attract significant amounts of investment, not just in our downtown, but throughout the city. And we're really focused on ensuring that we're investing in every neighborhood in the city. It's something that we heard and I've heard loud and clear from our residents, no matter where they live in the city, that we have to address the underlying issues that have been caused by structural racism and redlining. And we've demonstrated a commitment to that.
Other Democratic mayors in cities like Rochester and Buffalo were upset in their primary elections on Tuesday. That didn't happen in your case. What do you think the difference was?
Well, I think that we tried the best that we could, notwithstanding the pandemic, to connect with our residents and with our voters to ensure that we were listening. I knocked on a lot of doors as soon as most of the pandemic restrictions were lifted, and really have focused on making sure that we are listening to our residents, understanding what challenges they're facing, what the unmet needs are as we come out of this pandemic. And I believe that I've demonstrated an ability to manage through a number of challenging issues and do it in a thoughtful way that is as inclusive as possible.
Other results on Tuesday in the Common Council races have set the stage for some changes on the Common Council. Many of the seats were open, and of course, the Democratic primary is the key race in setting the council for next year. What was your reaction to the results in the council races?
Well, I was really pleased to see the incumbents who had challengers be successful in those races. I think very highly, of Jamel Robinson, Joyce Love, Alfredo Ballarin. They've done an outstanding job representing their wards. They have worked really hard to drive investment into their communities. And so I believe that they deserved to those victories. And also we knew we had a number of open seats that were, it wasn't clear, who was going to come out on top. But, I look forward to working with all of the new council members. It's a really exciting opportunity to have some new voices, fresh voices at the table. And, we look forward to making sure that we're working with them and understanding, what they heard at the doors and, what perspectives they can bring that will help us as we reinvest and move forward.
Do you have a message to Democratic voters who voted against you in the primary?
Well, listen, I think that it's challenging to, ensure that you're going to get every vote. But I am committed to representing every resident of the city of Albany, every Democrat, every Republican, every independent. It's my job to make sure that I'm listening and understanding what people's needs are, what their frustrations are, and how we can do better. We have a workforce that is committed to ensuring that we're meeting the needs of our residents. We face challenges doing that. We're facing some of the same challenges that our businesses are facing, for example, which is that we're having trouble filling jobs, finding people to do all of the work that needs to be done. But I'm committed to listening, and I always seek to be as agreeable as I can. We can disagree about what we you know, ultimately what policy decisions we make, but we don't have to be disagreeable with one another. So I've tried very hard to keep the conversation civil and to listen and to be as thoughtful as I can as I have to make and work with the council to make really challenging decisions.
There's a Republican candidate, Alicia Purdy, in the race in November, and an independent, Greg Adala, who will face you on the general election ballot. For people who haven't paid attention to the Democratic primary to this point, maybe residents who have a hangover from November's election and just weren't that engaged in this particular election, what's your message to the general Albany voter about why you think you deserve a third term?
I think that I have worked really hard to listen to our residents, to do, as much as we can to ensure that we are focused on our residents. This is a city of neighborhoods, and I believe that my administration has been responsive, and I also believe that I have the experience, the relationships, and the leadership to help us come out of this unprecedented time. We are not out of the woods yet. We still have concerns about variants with respect to the pandemic. We also have to ensure that when we look back 10 years from now, the money that we've received from the rescue plan, we can look at and say, we invested that in a way that has made our city stronger.
That's the federal COVID relief. Sorry to interrupt. Just the federal COVID relief that you're talking about.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I believe that I have the experience and the ability to quickly deploy that funding, to do it in a way that is inclusive, and to help lead our city forward as we come out of this unprecedented time.
Your opponents in the November election say the city has become too unsafe, and it's happened on your watch during your administration. How do you respond to that?
Well, look, I think that if you look at my overall record and you look at Part 1 crimes, they're actually down 25%. But that doesn't, address the fact that we have had an uptick in gun violence recently. We're focused on addressing that. Our police department has been successful in making arrests. We are experiencing the same thing that cities are experiencing across the country. We take it seriously. But we also have the programs in place to address gun violence in ineffective ways. And we're, you know, ensuring that we're funding those efforts and that we're doing all that we can to make sure that those who do engage in gun violence are arrested and, swiftly and taken off the street. So, this is a national problem, and I'm focused with our police department as well as other partners. You know, we have partners at the federal level and at the state level to ensure that we address this issue. This is about the proliferation of guns in our community. It's also about lack of access to resources, and it's also about ensuring that we are fully operational with the tools that we have that we know reduce gun violence. We were able to do it in 2019. 2018, we saw an uptick in gun violence that was cut by more than in half in 2019. We'll get back there. I'm confident that we will.
Your police chief just withdrew from the interview process for the Akron, Ohio police chief position after becoming one of four finalists for that job. Does he still have your confidence?
Absolutely. You know, as I said, all along through this process, he has my confidence. I have a top-rated team that captures the attention not only of cities across the state, but across the country. This has been an incredibly challenging year for everyone, including those in policing. He has my complete confidence, and I look forward to continuing to work for him. You know, it's under his leadership that we saw that precipitous decline in gun violence in our city. We need to get back up to full force. You know, that is the bottom line. We do not have enough police officers. That wasn't a budgetary decision. It was the result of COVID really limiting the size of the last two classes that we were able to accommodate. So we're committed to hiring a very large class as soon as we've asked the state to expedite the civil service exam scoring. So as soon as we get that list, we're going to get back up to full force.
But do you worry at all that he's interviewing for other jobs too?
Look, I don't ever begrudge anybody taking an interview. I think sometimes we think that the grass might be greener on the other side, and unless we go and look, we don't realize, that what we have here is really what we want. And so, you know, having those conversations and engaging in those interviews, as I said, I unfortunately or fortunately have headhunters contacting not just my police chief, but other leaders in the city on a pretty regular basis. And, you know, one of the gratifying things is that oftentimes they'll come to me and say, hey, I took this interview and I realized what a great opportunity I still have here in Albany and I'm committed to staying.
Last thing, you voted early in this election. Do you like early voting and do you think it's working?
Yes, I think early voting is working. I think the more convenient we can make it for people to vote, the better. I think that we have to really expand voter options. And I think we saw in 2020 that that really increased voter turnout. You know, I think voter turnout was very disappointing in this primary. I think it would happen for a couple of reasons. One being that this is the first time that the citywide primary has been in June. It also was, we were very limited in collecting signatures. And so didn't have nearly as many voter contacts as we would have had, in a normal cycle of getting signatures and petitioning. But, you know, I don't take anything for granted, and we're going to be back at it, making sure that we're out talking to residents, talking to voters, and doing all that we can to engage them.
Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan, the second-term Democrat, speaking after winning Tuesday's primary. Mayor Sheehan, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Cooperstown, New York is gearing up for a typical summer tourism season now that COVID-19 is on the wane and cultural attractions are reopening. That includes an in-person Baseball Hall of Fame induction ceremony in September and the summer season at Glimmerglass. It also comes as the region prepares for an influx of funding from federal COVID relief. Joining me now is Village Mayor Alan Tillipaw, who has been in office since 2018. How is the village doing as we speak here in late June?
We're really excited because this does just bode so well for what we would call a normal season. We certainly were greatly impacted last year in 2020, and businesses suffered, the village suffered. So we are looking forward to welcoming visitors to our many attractions.
What's the state of the comeback? How are tax receipts, you know, hotel bookings, that kind of thing?
You know, actually, the village is in a unique situation. We don't receive any bed tax revenues. That's never been shared by the county. We get a very small percentage of sales receipts. What we sort of generate some of our tourist income from is the use of village parking facilities, that sort of thing, on a visit. And we are seeing, you know, those revenues pick up, and we're looking forward, as I say, to a really successful season for the village.
The last time I was there, it was this winter, so that's kind of before the typical busy period. If someone comes to Main Street right now or they're visiting the Hall of Fame, is Cooperstown back to normal?
No, I wouldn't say we're back to normal. I was actually down in our Doubleday Field parking lot this morning, and there's plenty of parking places, and you can park, you know, pretty much right on Main Street within a block of the hall. So it is picking up, but I wouldn't say we're at, you know, the capacity that we've seen in past years.
How did you take the news that the Baseball Hall of Fame is going to revert to a normal, as much as normal can be this year, induction ceremony in September? Originally, it was going to be a limited event, and now that COVID restrictions are lifting, it's going to be the general audience on the lawn that we've seen in years past.
I think it's incredibly exciting, particularly for the 2020 inductees who will sort of finally get their day in the sun in the village of Cooperstown. I know everyone in the community is quite excited by that, there will be a well-attended public event, even though it's on a Wednesday in September. I think that we're anticipating a very nice turnout to welcome the inductees.
A lot of businesses are saying that they're having a hard time getting staffed back up. Hiring is a concern. Is that the case in Cooperstown?
You know, we haven't seen that as much. You know, we have a lot of high school students who suffered last year when our village parks weren't open, when, you know, certain restaurants didn't open, when tourist attractions didn't open, they suffered for kind of lack of employment. So, yes, there is a degree of probably trying to fill positions, but I know we've opened all our village parks this year. We're super excited. We've got all the lifeguards, caretakers we need. The village is well staffed, so I can only use that as an indicator, and we're doing well.
How is the village's housing picture as we speak?
You know, the village of Cooperstown does have a short-term rental law, so we have an annual registration, and we do have owner-occupied establishments and a few earlier ones that are kind of grandfathered. So there is certainly that's been addressed in the village. We're super excited about projects that do include more housing. To say that the pandemic was good for the real estate market, there were a lot of homes that were snatched up in the village of Cooperstown. I think people realize, you know, all the benefits of a community like Cooperstown, which offers cultural benefits, a great medical facility, so many opportunities for a really nice way of life.
What would you say your top priority is for the rest of the year as mayor?
You mentioned early on that the American Recovery Plan of funds will be rolling in. You know, interestingly, Cooperstown's a very small community. We're less than 1,800. So that puts us in a non-entitlement unit, as it's called. And although the village of Cooperstown is unique because it does gain revenue, and we are an incredible economic engine for Central New York as far as the tourism industry, which benefits so many and brings in millions, the village of Cooperstown is, you know, based on our population, we are not going to see a lot of recovery funds. So what we're focused on is we've been very successful in some grant opportunities, and we're going to be focused on implementing a lot of the projects that we have ongoing in the village that, you know, include major improvements to Village Hall for greater accessibility, completion of the Doubleday Field Historic Project with the construction of a third base building and bleachers, et cetera. So we have a lot of projects that we will be working on in the next few years.
So how does that work? If the federal COVID relief is coming to the county, will the county distribute some of that to the village, or are you just not going to get any funds?
It's different. If you are a large city, like over 50,000, or a county, you are getting your funds directly from the federal government. In fact, our county, Otsego County, has already received about $5.5 million of the ultimately about $11 million that they will get. It comes in two funding streams, one this year and then one 12 months later. For the village of Cooperstown, which is a non-entitlement unit and, you know, small townships, first we were told that those funds would be coming via a township. But we've now know, and we've completed all the paperwork. The funds go from the federal government to the Office of the State Comptroller and will then be distributed to the non-entitlement units. Even at this point, they can't tell us what exactly we'll be receiving, but there are indications of the amount that would be coming to the township, and the village of Cooperstown is mostly in the town of Otsego. So we know what they're going to get, and we know our percentage of the population in the township. So we know it's not a huge amount. It's probably less than a quarter of what we lost in revenue last year.
So how will you make up the difference?
We made up the difference because the village of Cooperstown fiscal year is June 1st through May 31st. So last year, when the pandemic began closing things down in March, we'd already sort of put together a budget, and we quickly revised it, and anticipating about $800,000 in lost revenues, which is pretty much what we did suffer. And we now are in the next budget year, June 1st, 2021-22 budget year, And we, again, we're conservative in our estimates. We're hopeful there are now signs that some of our conservative estimates, you know, will receive better funding than that. But we were just one of those ones that sort of fell in a niche where we're not getting some unique funds to replace what truly a tourism community like the Village of Cooperstown, you know, generates for everyone else.
Sounds like the pandemic really complicated your job in some ways.
You know, it perhaps our funding streams, but I have to tell you that I have a very good board of trustees. I have a very committed staff in the Village of Cooperstown. And, you know, I think we've navigated it very successfully.
That's Mayor Ellen Tilipa of the Village of Cooperstown, New York. Thank you so much for taking this time and explaining it all to us.
Thank you.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.